Hi, it's Tony Bennett wishing you a happy holiday.
Good life.
IDXers, welcome to Market Scope for December 2011. We're back in Columbia, Missouri with John Wesley Smith, going up the FM band.
Next up is 93.1. Actually, the transmitter is in Boonville, but of course, they purport to be a Columbia station. And they have a translator in Columbia at 103.5 because they don't saturate Columbia all that well, even though they do have a signal that gets out pretty well. I think they're 6,000 watts, maybe even as low as 3,000 watts still. I'm not certain about that. But they are Columbia's Jack FM. They have no live programming at all. There is a Jack FM in Kansas City at 105.1 that actually has a live morning show. This one has nothing like that. They started out on the air several years back as a music of your life type big band station.
Merry Christmas from your friend at the Salvation Army.
93.1 Jack FM. 93.1 Jack FM. Why not give us the finger? Then use it to dial 866-930-JACK.
And that's really about all Jack FM amounts to. If you don't have a Jack or a Mac or a Mike or a Steve or whatever FM in your area, well, in my humble but usually correct opinion, you're not missing much. Next up is 93.9 The Eagle. Their call letters are KSSZ, which harkens back to when they first came on the air. Well, actually, they've had a couple different sets of call letters, but for a while they were KISS 93.9, doing a soft rock kind of thing. Then around Thanksgiving time after 9/11 in 2001, they turned into an all-talk station. Their transmitter is in Fayette, which is northwest of Columbia, and I think they have 25, maybe 50,000 watts, I'm not sure. They put in a pretty fair signal around here. They have a morning drive program and an afternoon drive program between 4 and 6, so they cut off an hour of Sean Hannity. Otherwise, they carry programs like Glenn Beck and Laura Ingram, Sean Hannity, Michael Savage, a little bit of Dennis Miller, and some Neil Bortz, and then overnight it's Coast to Coast AM. And some of these programs that I just mentioned are kind of skewed as far as the hours that they carry them, because most of them aren't actually live, except for, I think, Sean Hannity is for a couple hours in the afternoon. And then on the weekends, they do a lot of repeats of the stuff that runs during the week, which doesn't really make any sense to me, but that's what they do. And they have a couple other things, too, like Kim Komando, which is also broadcast at a strange time on Sunday from 4 to 7.
It is 7 o'clock. Forecast today, cloudy. We'll see a high today of 42. Right now, 24. Hot Talk, 93.9 The Eagle.
Hot Talk for all of Mid-Missouri. 93.9 The Eagle. KSSZ. Fayette, Columbia. A free service of Zimmer Radio.
Fox News Radio. I'm Dave Anthony. Republicans take over the House today.
And now, award-winning news coverage with Manny Haley on Hot Talk 93.9 The Eagle.
Good morning, 7:03 here at The Eagle, 24 degrees outside. I'm Manny Haley. The wife of a former Jeff City police officer is charged with first-degree murder in her husband's shooting death. .7 at the Eagle. Time for Coach Cosmo with Eagle Sports.
Full slate of high school hoops from the area last night. Rockridge on the air on KTGR last night. A big win over Rockhurst out of Kansas City, 51-40. The Cuping Boys. Final non-con games for basketball tonight for Mike Anderson and the Tigers. They've got North Alabama at Mizzou Arena tonight, 7 o'clock. You can hear it on 96.7 KCMQ. The Mizzou women at home tonight on KTGR, ESPN 1580 and 100.5. On the road at number 9, Xavier. Pregame at 5:45. There's your sports. Hot Talk 93.9, The Eagle.
And your Eagle 93.9 weather forecast. Sunshine today, looking at a high of 42. More team coverage in less than 30 minutes. I'm Annie Haley on Hot Talk and 93.9, The Eagle.
Of Zimmer Radio in Wake Up Columbia with Tom Bradley. News with Manny Haley, Coach Cosmo on sports.
meteorologist Eric Aldridge and our producer Adam Spitfire Spitz. Tom Bradley on 93.9 The Eagle.
7:09. Good morning on a Wednesday. Good to have you along. I mean, good to have you along. Manny Haley, these guys that were breaking into MediaCom, they were trying to, what was it like, let my KOMU out?
Maybe they were concerned about the playoffs this weekend. I'm not sure.
Is that what it was?
No. Supposedly, they went into the, one of them went into the building, supposedly had a gun.
Over at college in Wilkes-Barre.
Over, yeah. And then ran out, and they got caught at the car wash across the street on College.
And this was during business hours?
Monday afternoon, yes. Now, they don't know if he had a gun because they didn't find the gun. They found pot in the car, and the other guy had an active warrant, so they arrested two. There was another guy in the car, but they let him go.
So MediaCom has a green screen in place for KOMU, and these guys had some green ganja in the car.
In the middle of the afternoon.
Wow.
I think their usual producer runs a tighter board. But anyway, there you go with a sample of the Eagle 93.9. Next up is Cat Country 94.3. They're actually licensed to California, Missouri. It's one of those stations that at one time was, fairly low power, like 6,000 watts or something, and actually did serve California, but, I don't know, sometime within the last maybe 15 years or so, they were bought out and increased their power to 50,000 watts and became Cat Country 94.3. California is southwest of Columbia, but the station is serving as a Jefferson City station.
94.3 Cat Country. Hi, it's Leah. Hope to hear from you tonight at 1-800-577-LIA. Let's you and me talk soon here, okay? On 94.3 Cat Country. Hi, it's Leah. Weekday mornings, make sure you wake up with Hilly and Hart. They will get you going with breakfast for the brain, lots of gossip with the celebrity scoop, and, of course, Mid-Missouri's latest and greatest country on 94.3 Cat Country.
KATI, California, Jefferson City.
I obviously would have gotten more chatter if I would have recorded them during their morning show with Hilly and Hart. They have a guy in the afternoon named Jay Walker, who I think has been around in Jefferson City radio for a long, long time. He's been around here as long as I've been here in this part of the country, for some 23 years now. I want to make brief mention of 94.9, which is a little 100-watt station up in Centralia and barely makes it to where I live. It runs a Seventh-day Adventist Christian format from a satellite service called Radio 74 International. The station is owned and operated by a Seventh-day Adventist school in Centralia. And the reason that I mention them is because they are right now testing at 88.7 with a considerably stronger signal that is probably going to be on the air by the time you hear this. Next on the dial is 95.7 KWWR Mexico, which claims to be Missouri's biggest country station. They have 100,000 watts, and their transmitter is something like 15 miles north of where I am here, and gets into all of my radios all over the place. And they actually have live people on the air all day, except overnight they run after midnight, I think it is. But they still have somebody there to actually give live forecasts. Mexico is 20-some miles northeast of Columbia.
The Top 30, a generous mix of oldies and a few classics. That's the recipe for a great radio station. Country 96 KWWR.
No good two-timing lies coming out of your mouth.
Good morning, 6:56 here at Country 96. I'm Chris Newbrow with this news update. Special Prosecutor Nicole Volkert has asked Linn County Judge Gary Ravens to replace her in the James Clampett involuntary manslaughter trial, which is long. The family will receive a variety of gifts from New Mexico Hospital and Women's and Children's Services. Those gifts include formula, diapers, a photo setting from Unger Photographic Designs, roses from a Garden Gate florist, and a digital thermometer. Country 96 Sports. Top-ranked Duke ran its winning streak to 24, longest in the nation. That's news here on Country 96.
Country 96 KWWR, Mexico, Columbia, Jefferson City, where we go retro every Sunday. Join us for Retro Country USA, Sundays from 4 to 6.
CNN Radio, I'm Bill Caiaccio.
It's a minute past 7 o'clock on this Thursday morning, 25 degrees. This check of radar weather is being brought to you by New Florence Care Center, where caring is what they're all about. And here's that radar weather forecast. Looks like partly cloudy skies, maybe some clouds this morning forming as we have a chance of flurries tonight and tomorrow. We're looking for a high today of 35. Partly cloudy for tonight and a low of 22. And for tomorrow, look for a high of 36 and a low temperature of 15 degrees. Partly to mostly cloudy over the weekend, highs in the 20s and lows in the teens, and a chance of snow on Monday with a high near 30 degrees. As we take a check of temperatures around the state, and skies are cloudy in Kirksville, where it's 27. It's mostly fair in central Missouri, 25 in Columbia, 27 degrees in Jefferson City, 25 here at Country 96. We have light westerly winds. The barometer is holding steady at 29.89. Humidity stands at 75%. 25 degrees with a wind chill of 23 this morning. Trace Atkins, This Ain't No Love Song, leading off the 7 o'clock hour. Stick around. We have a good oldie from Toby Keith on the way. Going to work in some Jared Neiman and Eric Church, too. And this is Bad Horse.
Her mind was made up.
Can't cheat in a small town. That's Mark Cook at Country 96. Yeah, everybody's going to find out about that sooner or later. Jared Neiman with Lover Lover on the way, and Smoke a Little Smoke. Eric Church, Randy Houser, Joe Nichols still to come, and a classic from the Oak Ridge Boys as well. Plus, we'll check birthdays and anniversaries coming up at 7:40 this morning.
This week on CMT's Country Countdown USA. Sunday morning at 8, brought to you by Mexico Cinema 3 on Country 96.
That morning announcer you just heard is Greg Holman. I don't know what his position is at the station, but he's been there ever since we've been here in Missouri. And the guy has done every shift on the station and done news and done all kinds of things there. Next up is another 100,000 water, 96.7 KCMQ in Columbia. The transmitter is actually in New Bloomfield or some little town around Jefferson City somewhere.
Coming up, I got a little Kansas, and we'll get to a cutoff women and children first with Van Halen, 96.7 KCMQ.
Bob and Tom, miss a morning, miss a lot.
It's comedian Bill Bellamy, and
I'm excited to be here on the Bob and Tom show.
The guy likes to look at booty.
Weekdays 5 to 9, only on 96.7 KCMQ, real classic rock.
Hi, I'm Scott Stewart, proud supporter of the 4-day work week.
Today, you listen to 96.7 KCMQ, real classic rock.
Carry on my wayward son.
In my car, when I get up.
The dial setting is 96.7. The call letters are KCMQ. We're Mid-Missouri's real classic rock station.
KCMQ, real classic rock in your home for Alice Cooper at night. That's Van Halen and The Cradle Will Rock. I'm Nikki Garman. About time for Nikki's All Request Nooners, an entire hour program by you. What tune you want to hear today? Call me on the Rock Lines, 1-800 855-1967. You can also email your Nooners at kcmq.com. Nooners are brought to you by Houlihan's in Columbia. Lunch in 15 minutes or it's free. Highway 63 and Broadway Bluff. The Nooners are also with the Business Loop Family Pawn Store. Paying cold hard cash for your unwanted gold. Visit familypawn.com. Nooners next, 96.7 KCMQ.
Monster trucks, mud box, and more. Covered indoor dirt arena. And the Boone County Fairgrounds will rock.
Having a hard time getting a Nooner?
That's right.
Then call now for Nikki's All Request Nooners. A rockin' lunch hour with nothing but your requests.
Join us as we stimulate your imagination.
1-800-455-1967 or email it at kcmq.com. 96.7 KCMQ. Real classic rock. Columbia, Jefferson City, Lake of the Ozarks.
Next up is 97.7, Power 97.7, because they are a big 100,000-watt station, but they're not actually a Columbia station. They're clear out near Sedalia, which is a good hour and 15 minutes away or so. They were classic rock, like KCMQ, until a few years ago when somebody bought them out and turned them into classic hits with a little less edginess. And a guy named Jack Daniels, who's been around this market forever, mostly in country stations, went over and became the morning guy there. So he does some chatter in the mornings, and otherwise, I think for the most part they're live, although they could be voice-tracked some.
Classic Hits, Power 97.7.
It's that magical time of year again. Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's.
And healthy habits.
So save and play. Get your free save and play card today. The one card that gives you money-saving discounts in area businesses every day of the year.
No matter where you are in West Central Missouri.
Let's get back on track.
From Lee Summit to Rocky Mount.
Just enjoy the music.
Classic Hits, Power 97.7.
Thanks, John. I really enjoyed your commentary and knowledge. John will be back as we start a new year to finish Columbia's FMs. The address to send your market scope? Phil Wayne, 7545 County Highway 71, Harpster, Ohio, 43323-9364. Thank you very much. I wish you all a safe and merry Christmas, and may all kinds of neat DXing stuff await you under the Christmas tree. Now, this guy with a deep voice is here to introduce the musings from the members.
Well, Santa looked a lot like Daddy, or Daddy looked a lot like him.
Give us your thoughts about what's happening in your area. Call the Musings Line. Keep your ears open, and when you hear something that's important for everyone to know, call us.
Hello, fellow DXers. Wayne Ryan in Brantford, Ontario. Thank you very much to Skip Dabblestein in Tucson, Arizona. He sent me a four-cassette package regarding CKLW during their days as a top 40 station. The Minnesota Twins hired a new announcer for 3 years. He worked with Bob Uecker. Well, he worked for 3 years with Milwaukee. I don't know how long his contract is with the Twins. And I can't think of his name, but maybe some of you folks, I'm sure Mark Durenberger would know. Mark was telling me at the convention he was hoping that Dan Schulman would have got it, who was one of ours from up here. And I like Dan very much myself, but I'm sure that fellow will do a very good job when the baseball season comes back around. I'm looking forward to hearing him. I'm sorry to note the death of Larry Munson on Sunday night, November the 20th, in Atlanta. When I lived in Nashville, he was on WSM and had been for years doing the sports there. He did Nashville Vols baseball when they were in the Southern Association, and he did Vanderbilt football and basketball on the station, too, for a long time. Then he got down to Atlanta, he did the Georgia Bulldogs football and basketball, WSB originated that, and he also worked briefly for the Atlanta Braves on their broadcast with Milo Hamilton and Ernie Johnson when the team first moved down there from Milwaukee. I've been receiving WJOX on 690 out of Birmingham, Alabama the last few nights. There's another station came under it one night, but I didn't get what it was. They're a Fox Sports outlet.
Good morning, everyone. It's November the 15th, and I'm Joe Schwab here in Fredericksburg, Virginia, with a quick update on the AM radio situation since the last time I had to check it last year. First of all, WNXT, and I believe I've got those call letters right on 1350, has adopted a split news, talk, and sports format. What they do is they have the normal talk schedule, Glenn Beck 9 to noon, Rush Limbaugh noon to 3, Sean Hannity 3 to 6. At 6, they go into an hour news roundup, and then from 7 p.m. to 9 a.m. the next morning, they go to ESPN programming, and then at 9 they do the ABC News and then start the format over again, and I believe they're all sports on the weekend. In the meantime, WFVA has gone to the satellite syndicated format with Jeff Rollins in the morning. I believe that's a Stardust format, so they've adopted that format all the time. I don't know who made what changes first. Also, WNXT on 1350 is simulcasting with an FM on 96.5. They never mentioned their FM in their ID, so I'm not sure whether it's a low-power FM or what the deal on that is. But anyway, that's the latest from Fredericksburg, Virginia. Happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and I, of course, enjoyed the magazine. I'm glad I've resubscribed to it for another year. 73s, everyone.
And that, my friends, is the only calls we got. So let's just move on. If you'd like to muse, just give us a call on the Musings line. You have to be a DX Audio Service member or an EDXN subscriber to muse on the musings to the members. Also, I got a letter a while back from Victor Schmidt asking if it was okay to submit a article to the DX Audio Service. And by all means, please do so. If you remember a while back, we used to have a lot of people submitting articles to us back about 20 years ago when we started the magazine. And for some reason, that's all but dried up. I'd like to hear more than just Dave, Mark, Phil, and Fred on the magazine. So why not consider putting together a small article? Maybe it's just something out of the newspaper that you'd like to read, or it's a news story that you know of that you've recorded off the radio or TV. Or it could be a review that you're doing on a radio or some other electronic device. Our only criteria for putting stuff on the DX Audio Service is it needs to be radio-related and it should be of general interest to everyone. That's it. Send it to me here at the DX Audio Service. Our studio headquarters is at 706 McKenzie, that's M-A-C-K-E-N-Z-I-E, Lima, Ohio, 45805. And if you'd like to send it in MP3 format, just contact me, and I'll give you a special address that you can either email it to me or an FTP, or we'll figure out some way of getting it to and fro. But I'd like to encourage all members to think about submitting something from time to time to make this a member-supported magazine.
The DX Audio Service.
We rock. You roll. Get it?
There's nothing else quite like it.
Now let's cover some of the news for the month of December 2011.
Inside the Russian Shortwave Radio Enigma by Peter Savodnik. In Wired Magazine, October 2011. From a lonely, rusted tower in a forest north of Moscow, a mysterious shortwave radio station transmitted day and night. For at least the decade leading up to 1992, it broadcast almost nothing but beeps. After that, it switched to buzzes, generally between 21 and 34 per minute, each lasting roughly a second, a nasally foghorn blaring through a crackly ether. The signal was said to emanate from the grounds of a mini-military city near the village of Povoroko, and very rarely, perhaps once every few weeks, the monotony was broken by a male voice reciting brief sequences of numbers and words, often strings of Russian names, Anna, Nikolai, Ivan, Tatiana, Roman. But the balance of the airtime was filled by a steady, almost maddening series of inexplicable tones. The amplitude and pitch of the buzzing sometimes shifted, and the intervals between tones would fluctuate. Every hour on the hour, the station would buzz twice quickly. None of the upheavals that had enveloped Russia in the last decade of the Cold War and the first two decades of the post-Cold War era, Mikhail Gorbachev, perestroika, the end of the Afghan War, the Soviet implosion, the end of price controls, Boris Yeltsin, the bombing of Parliament, the first Chechen War, the oligarchs, the financial crisis, the second Chechen War, the rise of Putinism, had ever kept UVB-76, as the station's call sign ran, from its inscrutable purpose. During that time, its broadcast came to transfix a small cadre of shortwave radio enthusiasts who tuned in and documented nearly every signal it transmitted. Although the buzzer, as they nicknamed it, had always been an unknown quantity, it was also a reassuring constant, droning on with a dark metronome-like regularity. But on June 5th, 2010, the buzzing ceased. No announcements, no explanations, only silence. The following day, the broadcast resumed as if nothing had happened. For the rest of June and July 2010, UVB-76 behaved more or less as it always had. There were some short-lived perturbations, including bits of what sounded like Morse code, but nothing dramatic. In mid-August, the buzzing stopped again. It resumed, stopped again, started again. Then on August 25th, 2010, at 10:13 a.m., UVB-76 went entirely haywire. First, there was silence, then a series of knocks and shuffles that made it sound like someone was in the room. Before this day, all the beeping, buzzing codes and numbers had hinted at an evil force hovering on the airwaves. Now it seemed as though the wizard were suddenly about to reveal himself. For the first week of September 2010, transmission was interrupted frequently, usually with what sounded like recording snippets of Dance of the Little Swans from Tchaikovsky's Swan Lake. On the evening of September 7th, something more dramatic, one listener even called it existential, transpired. At 8:48 p.m. Moscow time, a male voice issued a new call sign, Mikhail Dmitry Zhenya Boris, indicating that the station was now to be called MDZHB. Just a few years before, such a remarkable development on a shortwave station would have been noted by only a tiny group of hobbyists. But starting the previous June, after the first mysterious outage, a feed of UVB-76 had been made available online, cobbled together by an Estonian tech entrepreneur named Andrus Oslade, who has been enthralled by shortwave radio since the first grade. Shortwave was an early form of the Internet, says Oslade, who goes by the nickname Laid. You dial in, you never know what you're going to hear. During one 24-hour period at the height of the buzzer's freakout in August 2010, more than 41,000 people listened to Oslade's feed. Within months, tens of thousands and then hundreds of thousands were listening, from the U.S., Russia, Britain, the Czech Republic, Brazil, Japan, Croatia, and elsewhere. By opening up UVB-76 to an online audience, Oslade had managed to take shortwave radio, one of the most niche hobbies imaginable, and rejuvenate it for the 21st century. Today, the buzzer's fan base includes Kremlinologists, anarchists, hackers, installation artists, people who believe in extraterrestrials, a former Lithuanian minister of communications, and someone in Virginia who goes by the moniker Room 641A, a reference to the alleged nerve center of a National Security Agency intercept facility at an AT&T office in San Francisco. All of them are mesmerized by this bewildering signal, now mostly buzzing once again. They can't help but ponder the significance of it, wondering about the purpose behind the pattern. No one knows for sure, which is both the worst and the best part of it. Shortwave radio aficionados developed various hypotheses about the role of the station in Russia's sprawling military communications network. It was a forgotten node, one theory ran, set up to serve some function now lost deep in the bureaucracy. It was a top-secret signal, others believed, that transmitted messages to Russian spies in foreign countries. More ominously, countered another theory, UVB served as nothing less than the epicenter of the former Soviet Union's dead-hand doomsday device, which had been programmed to launch a wave of nuclear missiles at the U.S. in the event the Kremlin was flattened by a sneak attack. Even today, listening to UVB-76 is like listening to a world that hasn't existed for decades. This feels especially true late at night when you're in a dark basement headset on, enveloped by all the pops and whirs and snippets of anonymous voices from other signals seeping across the airwaves. Those happen when you're listening in front of your receiver passing by Radio Havana at 3 o'clock in the morning. Most observers believe that UVB-76 is an example of what's called a numbers station, used to communicate encrypted messages to spies or other agents. Typically, these stations transmit numbers in groups of five, making it impossible to detect partitions between words and sentences. The numbers can be decoded using a key in the possession of the intended listener. Numbers stations are thought to have existed since World War I, as documented by the Connet Project, a compilation of recordings first released in 1997. An online group calling itself Enigma 2000 collects data about numbers stations around the world. Jochen Schaffer, who heads the group's German branch, says of UVB-76, "It's no typical numbers station, but it is one." Usually, he says, numbers stations begin their transmissions with a call sign, then move on to a specially produced introduction. The Lincolnshire Poacher, for example, got its moniker because every broadcast kicked off with the first two bars of the English folk song with the same name before they started broadcasting numbers. This station is different because of its structure, Schaffer says. Most of the time, there's just the buzzing tone. The messages come at irregular times. But this anomalous format has prompted some UVB-76 listeners to suggest that it is not a numbers station at all. One former high-ranking European official and longtime student of Soviet jamming of Western radio stations, known to his fellow UVB-76 fans as JM, maintains that the buzzer's purpose is to transmit coded orders to military units within Russia, not to spies outside its borders. JM notes that most of what has been pieced together about the station's specs, its frequency of 4625 kHz, its main 20-kilowatt transmitter, its 5-kilowatt backup transmitter, and its horizontal dipole antenna, point to conventional military use. When asked why anyone cares about UVB-76 and why they should care about shortwave in general, folks reply by invoking the universal connectivity that this primitive technology allows. Imagine somebody with a Morse key or a reel-to-reel tape deck in the middle of the desert running a shortwave transmitter off a diesel generator and sending music or messages toward the ionosphere. In the middle of the night, it doesn't get any more spiritual than that. A new intrigue about UVB-76, or MDZHB, is the question of its location. Soon after the upheavals of August and September 2010, with all the stopping and starting and knocking and whispering, shortwave listeners reported another remarkable shift. The station's position seemed to have moved. JM, the former European official, has since helped trace its rough location to near the town of Pskov, close to Russia's border with Estonia. But no one has been able to triangulate exactly where the broadcast is coming from. One listener theorizes that the move was related to a Russian military reorganization that took place that September, when the Moscow and Leningrad military districts were merged to form a new command center in St. Petersburg, which would explain why UVB-76, too, might have migrated hundreds of miles northwest. For the foreseeable future, though, the site of the transmitter has been added to the long list of its enduring mysteries.
UZB-76, 93-882, 74-14, 35-74.
And that story by Peter Savodnik appeared in Wired.com. Mark Dernberger for the DX Audio Service.
FCC proposing to leave local TV radio ownership caps in place. This article is from Multi-Channel News, authored by John Egerton, November the 18th, 2011. Federal Communications Commission Chairman Julius Genachowski, according to sources familiar with the document, has circulated a rulemaking proposal recommending the FCC scrap
the radio TV cross ownership rules, but leave in its place the radio and TV local marketship owner caps. Now that would essentially preserve the FCC's attempted loosening of the newspaper broadcast cross ownership rules, which the agency tried to do under then Republican Chairman Kevin Martin. It is more or less the same framework of the 2006 quadriennial, said the source of the newspaper broadcast change. The notice of proposed rulemaking, which is currently being circulated amongst the commissioners, may be voted without being on a public agenda meeting, according to the source. There are apparently at least three votes for it. The final order, though, will likely be scheduled for that public vote sometime next year, after a sufficient notice and comment period on the proposed changes. Since the NPRM has not yet been voted, there is still opportunity for the commissioners to make suggested tweaks and modifications, and for industry to pitch its points. But circulation of the item essentially represents the chairman's okay with the plan. While the NPRM basically reinstates the Martin plan of making combos between TV stations and newspapers in the top 20 markets, presumptively in the public interest, it does put out for comment the Martin four-part test for determining whether such combos would and should be allowed and whether they should be the criteria. That test is the extent to which the combination will increase the amount of local news in the market, whether each media outlet in the combination will exercise independent news judgment, the level of concentration in the DMA, and the financial condition of the newspaper or broadcast station, and whether the new owner plans to invest in newsroom operations if either outlet is in financial distress. Broadcasters will not be happy with the news that the local market caps are not scheduled to be lifted, or that the newspaper broadcast cross-ownership ban is not being scrapped. Even a bipartisan trio of former FCC chairmen concede to C-SPAN that they thought the ban should be scrapped, but they did not propose doing so for political reasons. And broadcasters have argued that the local caps are an artifact of bygone era that prevent them from competing more cost-effectively in a media landscape remade by digital delivery. The notice of proposed rulemaking would be the follow-up to the notice of inquiry on the Commission's Quadriennial Media Ownership Regulation Review, which is required by Congress. But it is also responsive to a Third Circuit Court of Appeals remand of the Martin plan to loosen the newspaper broadcast cross-ownership ban. The court said the Federal Communications Commission had not given that change adequate notice or opportunity for comment. But it had no problem with Martin's decision not to loosen the other media ownership rules. Circulating the notice of proposed rulemaking now gives Commissioner Michael Copps a chance to weigh in on the NPRM before he exits at the end of next month. Also, as part of the NPRM, the Federal Communications Commission will ask whether shared service agreements and other joint TV station operating agreements violate those local market station limits the FCC is keeping in place. Cable operators, for example, led by the American Cable Association, have argued that agreements are a way to sidestep the rules and provide broadcasters with unfair bargaining power in retransmission deals.
Downs advocates for AM solutions by Paul McLean in Radio World. Here's a question. If you sat in your office at 11 a.m. and turned on an AM radio, would the audio be listenable? What if you tried at home at 8 p.m. in the middle of your living room? For many readers, both answers will be no. Ben Downs and his business partner, Bill Hicks, own five radio stations in Bryan, College Station, Texas, four of which operate on AM frequencies, including a grandfathered W call sign that turns 90 next year. Both men live in the community. All of the station's announcers are live and local. Their news and sports departments employ nine people. Brian Broadcasting is local. Indeed, Down says it's the only locally owned commercial medium of any kind left in the Brazos Valley. But thanks to problems of mounting noise, plus the proliferation of mobile devices lacking AM reception entirely, Downs fears his AM stations and many others are threatened with extinction. That's why Downs, who has been in radio since age 14 and is now a second-term member of the radio board of the National Association of Broadcasters, has pushed NAB to explore ways to help AM operators. There are some 4,800 AM radio stations in the U.S. Some 2,000 of them are members of NAB. In October, the radio board gave Kevin Gage, NAB's new executive vice president and chief technology officer, permission to spend money on a study to explore options for AM broadcasters from an engineering perspective. The results are likely to be among the most scrutinized of any report out of NAB in recent years. At stake, Downs thinks, is nothing less than the future of radio's senior service. He says, "I truly believe if we do nothing, we'll have no AM band in 5 to 10 years. We have very little of one now. The marketplace," Downs thinks, "already is doing what it can. Talk and sports formats in big markets increasingly have moved to FM. Some 500 AMs are using FM translators, anxious for any footing on the FM band. But," Downs said, "a lot of us don't have access to a spare FM or a translator." As authorized by the board, the NAB plans to look into options involving the technology of content delivery, regulation, and frequency band rules. What kind of answers might it develop? Expect the authors to explore options like converting the AM band to all digital, moving AMs to those low VHF TV channels, allowing AMs to make more use of translators and FM iBox multicasts, and taking advantage of less discussed options like mobile DTV. Ideas such as going all digital would be contentious, and Downs acknowledges 1,000 reasons why any of these won't work. But just deciding to study the question, he said, is a page-turning moment for NAB. Downs himself favors using channels 5 and 6, where a small number of full-power TV stations remain, along with Class A and LPTV stations. He says radio manufacturers likely would go along because most FM receivers already have this capability. They're built to accommodate consumers in Japan. The hardware is already there. The receivers are already built. Using channels 5 and 6 will be one of the options explored in the study, though Downs makes clear NAB has not endorsed this or any other specific strategy. In fact, in 2008, NAB opted not to support the AM migration proposal put forward by the Broadcast Maximization Committee. That would have required AMs to go all digital, and it didn't protect full-power TV stations left behind on 5 and 6 after the DTV transition. Since some of the TV people cannot move, it seemed that this was a big roadblock, but maybe we could convince the FCC through regulatory changes, Down said, that this could be shared. Both FM and DTV could share these frequencies. Board members pondered the idea for the last year or so, and at the fall radio show, the Joint Executive Committee asked NAB's technical staff to instigate a study that might help AM owners. Joint Board Chair Paul Karpowitz and Radio Chair Carolyn Beasley made the motion. "The noise kicked up by digital and solid-state devices is basically rendering the AM band unlistenable," Down said. "Get a clock radio and put it in your house and try to listen at night sometime. You're lucky to get one station. AM radio," he believes, "is lost in-home and in-office listening, and soon will lose in-car too, thanks to LED traffic lights, meter reader systems, and other noise sources." Downs said that research in other countries, while limited, shows that AMs would have to increase power dramatically to match coverage they had 10 years ago to overcome the increased noise. Anecdotally, that appears to be true here in the United States, too. Another big problem is lack of availability of mobile devices that can receive AM in the first place. "That little thing in your pocket," Down said, "the handset, has now replaced watches, pockets, cameras. We all know what it's done to landlines. Young people are even using it as a flashlight. It'll ultimately replace the $20 clock radio. Both of my kids use their iPhones as their alarm clocks in the morning." But the law of physics dictate that AM reception antennas must be long, which is a problem. Further, the handset itself is likely to be a noisy place. As it stands today, he says, there's not a really good pathway into mobile devices if you're going to stay on the AM band. Down said he'll favor any solution that fixes the interference and gets AM radio into handsets in the next 5 to 10 years. He says, I'm just hoping that the people who have power to make these decisions understand the value that licensed AM broadcasters bring to the table. He said, many good stations, many good strong AM stations remain in business. However, if we don't do something, all of those licensees are going to be marginalized. If we don't find a way to preserve them, then we will lose a huge amount of community voices. Downs concluded after an interview with Radio World, there is nobody who talks about my little Bryan College Station community like our AM stations do. We are very local. We serve the community. That word is overused. I wish I had a better word for it. Pandora will not have a food drive in Bryan, Texas. And that report entitled Downs Advocates for AM Solutions by Paul McLean in Radio World was published on November 16th, 2011.
And that wraps up this edition of the DX Audio Service. We'll see you next year, January 2012. Until then, get out and support radio.
That holy smoke, it's Christmas time again. My wife just sent me to the store to buy a roasting hen. There's chickens for all gone, so what's the use? And I wound up with one old scrawny, skinny Christmas goose. On the way back home, I stopped to have a brew and stayed for several hours, 'cause I met some guys I knew. When I got home, I gave my wife the goose. Then she hit me with the rolling pin, I swallowed all my snooze. If I had wings, then I would fly away, and I would leave that old bat home until next Christmas Day. I just can't take no more of this abuse. Why did she get so mad at me for just one Christmas goose? There's no one quite so mean as Singapore.
You said it.
Then she is in the kitchen fixing Christmas smorgasbord.
With Lapsa.
She's big and strong and boy is she obtuse. And she knocked me silly on the corner, yes, one Christmas goose. If I had wings, then I would fly away. And I would leave that old bat home until next Christmas Day. It would be fun to be out on the loose, but on second thought I'll hang around and share that Christmas goose.